welcome to Ask Gwen. And the teacher in me has to put this parental guidance on this podcast. As you know, well, those of you that don't know, I experienced the fairly similar situation to my guest today, Tina. My mom died of viral meningitis. She went into the hospital with a slow leaking brain aneurysm. They caught it, the slow leaking brain aneurysm. But hockey players came in and not only affected my mom, but we believe 10 other families. So today we're going to talk about life support and the end of life. That being said, if you have kids in the background, which I know you sometimes listen to us when with the kids, yeah, this won't be the episode for the kids. So I'm going to let Miss Tina take it away, and if you hear a sweet Southern accent, that is because Miss Tina's from the South. So if you just hear that sweet Southern accent, don't worry about it. Tina has a very interesting story, but as I said, this episode today is not meant for kids and not meant for the adults that don't want to face the end of life. So I'll let Tina take it away.
Thank you, Wynn. And yes, I am very guilty of having a Southern accent. So I am born and raised in North Carolina. I traveled for 15 years in lots of different places. I lived in Chicago and Florida and D.C. and Atlanta. And I caught all kinds of grief about my Southern accent. So, yeah, guilty as charged.
Yep.
I would like to start by saying, yes, some of what we're going to talk about today isn't probably for, you know, young ones that are a little bit confused about, you know, the whole circle of life kind of thing. But I would encourage all the adults to hang in there and listen, because I think you're going to get a different perspective about hospice care, which is a lot of what we're going to talk about. I worked in hospice care for 13 years. I now work in long-term care. I work in an assisted living community with memory care. And what I want to share with you is a couple of the misunderstandings about hospice and what it is and when it's time to call hospice. I do want to sort of interject my heartfelt sympathies to the family of Aretha Franklin. We just heard within the last hour that she passed away, and she was in
hospice
care.
Oh, my God.
Just within the last hour. She was 76.
Right. Yeah.
I'm sure most, if not all, of your listeners know who Aretha Franklin is. She was known as the Queen of Soul.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Famous for that song, Respect, right? R-E-S-P-E-C-T?
Yep. Yep.
So my heart goes out to her family right now, because they said she was their matriarch of the family, and they really are suffering. But I was thrilled to know that hospice was there helping them. And so I guess what I want to start with is, what is hospice? Most people think hospice is just for the last few days or weeks of life, when in fact, hospice is appropriate when the estimated end of life is within 6 months or less, and you're no longer seeking curative treatment. The reason it is so important to involve hospice as soon as you can is, I just love the quote, one of our medical directors would always say, you know, we're not helping people die, we're helping people live until they die. That is a very different way most people think of hospice. And so, in fact, the hospice ribbon, you know, when does cerebral palsy have a ribbon, a tagline, and a ribbon that they're kind of known for?
Yes, we do. We are, our national color is green, believe it or not. And I don't, you asked me a question and I don't know the answer to. Now I have to look it up. Now I have to look it up and see.
I bet there is.
I know the national color is green and I know we have a ribbon, but, I don't know our tagline. Now I have to look it up.
Okay. All right. Well, you do that while I share with your listeners that the National Hospice Ribbon, the tagline is, it's about how you live. And that is, again, because hospice, I like people to think of it as bucket list time. If you have an estimated end of life of 6 months or less, now is the time we want to help you feel comfortable and pain-free so that you can go do some of the things you would like to do that you haven't done yet. And an example is with my own mother, who was in hospice care for 4.5 months. 1.5 months before she died, she said, I want to go to the beach and drink tequila sunrise on the beach at sunset. And that's what we did. And hospice was able to help facilitate us getting her to the beach. If something had happened while we were at the beach that she needed hospice care, the hospice at the beach would have taken care of her. But they were able to manage her pain and symptoms so that we could take her to the beach like she wanted to do. There was another gentleman whose wife came in hospice care, and he said once they got her pain and symptoms managed, he was able to take her to some cities that she had never been to before because her pain was under control and she could enjoy those trips. So when people think hospice, yes, go ahead, please.
So what I was going to say is that hospice is, now I'm going to sound like a complete idiot, but hospice is not essentially for lying around. It's for pain management, isn't it?
That's exactly right. It's exactly right.
I didn't realize that until today.
Yes.
See, Tina,
yes.
You taught me something.
Oh, listen, before we're done, hopefully I'll teach you and your listeners several things that it just, you don't know what you don't know. But here's what I want you to know. Hospice and palliative care is a specialty, just like cardiology is for heart, oncology is for cancer. And the specialty for hospice and palliative care is pain and symptom management. That is their job. That is their specialty. And that word palliative is a kind of a long, strange, hard to say word. But the root word palliate simply means to ease. So hospice and palliative care help people manage their pain and symptoms so that they can make the most out of every day they have left on this planet. And I also want to interject when nobody knows when somebody's going to die other than the dear Lord above, but when the doctor's best guess is it's a 6 month or less prognosis and they're no longer seeking curative treatment, that's when you can start involving hospice. And let's say 6 months comes, and the person is still with us, which is great, and we love it when that happens. The doctor, once again, says, okay, do I think we're still in a six-month window to end of life? And if the answer to that is yes, in my professional opinion, I think we're 6 months, the end of life will happen in 6 months, then the program just rolls forward. So some people are in hospice care for years.
So now I have a question because I said at the top of this podcast that my mom was not my stepmom. My stepmom, who I love dearly, is still with us and still active and still kicking. But my biological mom was, and she said to me, as we were going to appointment one day, she said to me, if anything were to happen to me, and I was placed in the medically induced coma. I don't want to be on coma care as long as I have to be. I mean, I want to be taken off ASAP and die, essentially. But I have a funny feeling that since she got viral meningitis, should we as a family, should I involve hospice and taking her out of the hospital? I mean, what do you do in that sense? Because as I said, she was recovering from a brain aneurysm before she got viral meningitis.
Yes. Yes. So your mom, her illness happened at the 11th hour, completely unexpected. Like you said before, I think you hit the record button, is she was on her way to rehab. And she was doing great. Yeah. So nobody had a clue she was going to get meningitis and die. Yeah. That was a very last minute, horrible, unexpected situation.
Yeah, it was.
And I think you also said before you recorded that, and you were afraid you were going to have to take her off life support, but she passed away before she ever went on life support.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
She passed away on life support, and I swear to God, she because my family, you guys don't know this, but my family came up in the middle of the night. They actually came up in the middle of the night to get me, and they scared me half to death, actually. Her mom, her sister, my dad came. I had someone staying with me. And her sister, my dad, and her brother came home. They left Denver at 5, and they came here. They said to me, after walking in my room at midnight and scaring me half to death because I was dead asleep, they said to me, "Mom's so sick," and this is going to cry, "Mom's so sick that we have to leave in the morning." So what I remember is driving down to Denver and essentially saying goodbye, because my mom made it. My mom was the strongest woman ever. And for those who knew my mom personally, you guys know this, but my mom decided to not let herself go until I got down there.
Aww.
I swear to God.
Oh,
that
I don't doubt
her
it.
Machine
I don't doubt it.
Was still going, and then once I got down there and said my piece, she passed away the next day.
Yeah.
I got down there August 11th. Her machines was still August 11th to 2010. Her machines was still going. We were all able to kiss goodbye, and we were all able to say the peace. And then she died August 12th, 5:45 a.m.
Well, I got goosebumps when you said she waited for you, because I'm sure that's exactly what she did.
She waited.
Yeah.
I swear, because her sister, her both her sisters couldn't believe it. I'm like, I swear, both her sisters couldn't believe that her machines were still going. Obviously, she was mentally induced by this point, and obviously her heart rate was going down, not up.
Mm-hmm.
But she waited until I got down there.
Yes, she did.
Yeah.
So to answer your question, what's so beautiful is that she said to you before, now was it your mom or your stepmom? I'm a little confused when you said you were in the car headed to the doctor
And she said, if something happens to me.
My biological mom. My biological mom. And I knew I know exactly where I was standing. I was standing in my front hallway. And she always sent me, my jewelry would go to you, which I still have. My clothes would go to my sisters, which the sisters didn't want to take. And so we ended up consigning those. And then she dropped them off. She said, if anything were to happen medically, I'm not afraid of death taking me off life support ASAP.
Mm-hmm. And the reason I applaud that is all of us have different opinions. All of us have different wishes and values. And the fact that she wanted you to know what her wishes were, we call that advanced care planning. So in advance of any of the unexpected, in advance of a horrible diagnosis, in advance of some sort of crisis, you really ideally want to have conversations with your loved ones to share with them what your wishes are. And you just kind of do scenario planning. You know, you can never know what's going to happen. But like, you know, if this happens, always do this. And if this happens, never do that. And if this happens, do this if it's going to get me on the other side of it. And you just kind of do scenario planning because we all feel differently. And that's great. That's fine. We all get to have our own wishes and opinions about what we want and when we don't want it anymore. So it's so important. You know, a lot of people put a lot of emphasis on getting documents done. So there's two main documents. There's a living will that has to do with life support, which includes ventilation and artificial nutrition hydration. And then there's a document called a healthcare power of attorney, which is when you pick a living, breathing person to speak for you if the day comes that you cannot direct your own care. So of the two, a lot of people are more familiar with living wills when, in fact, selecting that person to speak for you, if you're not able to speak for yourself, is really the most important thing to do. That's called a healthcare power of attorney. And so all that to say, having these kinds of conversations in advance of a crisis, you know, like if she had not said that and she had wound up on life support, you and your family probably would have been wringing your hands about what do we do, what do we do. But in this case, you didn't have to wonder because she told you.
And
so you would have had peace of mind.
Yeah, he did. And she did not tell my dad. She did not tell my dad. I actually told my dad in the room with a social worker, my dad's brother, and her brother, when the social worker asked, or someone who was in the hospital asked, what are we going to do next? I said,
right.
I know my mom's wishes. That nurse looked at me like I was crazy. My dad agreed with me. And actually looked at me like, how did you know that? Because I said, Mom told me. Mom
Isn't
told
that
me. And she, he looked at me like, you're nuts to know these things. And I said, well, Mom told me, and here we go. We're pulling off life support. And so I think we were lucky. We were extremely lucky in two senses. We only had it for a month, and she wasn't afraid of death, and she told me her final wishes, and that makes my heart so happy that we didn't have to go through this for 2 months, 3 months, and I knew her final wishes. So for those who don't know their families, final wishes, how do we have this conversation? I mean, no one wants to talk about death or money. They don't want to talk about death or money. My mom, on the other hand, wanted to talk about death. She didn't necessarily want to talk about money, but that's okay. But how do we start having these conversations with loved ones just so people are not standing there in the ICU. And I swear to God, my mom could hear me say that because we were in a room across from her, and I swear to God, she heard me say, take it off, let's book. And so, I swear to God, that's why she made it, until I got down there. And then she passed away. But how do, we have these conversations with family members before we get to that critical point where you don't know what's going on, where doctors are trying to help loved ones?
Well, I've got a wonderful technique for everybody to use because you're right. People don't want to talk about this. It's depressing.
No.
You know, it's the hardest, most sad, emotionally draining experience any of us will ever have is when we lose someone we love. But I will tell you, the grief counselors that work in hospice will tell you, they can tell after the death when these conversations happened in advance and when they did not. Because when they happened in advance, there's such a peace and such a comfort level that the survivors have because they know they did exactly what their family member wanted. The people that never had that conversation are the ones where they're all looking at each other, what do we do next, what do we do next? And often there's fights and disagreements about what to do. And so after the death, there's a lot of guilt. And they're like, I don't know if I did the right thing. And so it's the greatest gift you can give your family is to have these conversations long before the crisis. So here's my recommendation. You get everybody around the dinner table. You describe for them your perfect last day on the planet. And when I say perfect last day, I mean high in the sky. Anything goes. And so, for example, I'm going to share with you my perfect last day. I am not proud of this, but I am very starstruck. I just am. So my perfect last day is I'm going to go to the Oscars. I'm going to attend the Academy Awards and see all those movie stars because I'm so starstruck. It's ridiculous. After the Oscars, I'm going to go dancing to Frank Sinatra in some fabulous dancing club. I'm going to eat a steak and a lobster dinner with a fabulous champagne. When it's time to go home and get into bed, I want somebody to put on Louis Armstrong's It's a Wonderful World so I can hear that in the background. That's my favorite song. I want somebody baking a cobbler. There comes out the southern part of me. Some kind of peach cobbler, blueberry cobbler. I don't care what kind of it. Some sort of cobbler so I can smell that. I have a list of people I want to be sure are there. And I've actually been married and divorced twice, so I have a little list of a few people I want to be sure are not there. I got a crazy cousin that I do not want there. And then I want somebody holding my hand. And I don't care if they have to do round-the-clock shifts. I want somebody holding my hand. That's what I want. So if you describe your perfect last day on the planet to your family, I can guarantee you, you are going to share things with them that they did not know were important to you. So it'll be a fun conversation, but it'll also be a meaningful conversation. And after you finish with your perfect last day, then you slide into, you know what, if the Mack truck were to hit and I can't speak anymore, here's what I want. Always do this. Don't ever do that. If this happens, do this. If that happens, do that. And, again, it's just scenario planning. You can't describe or predict what's going to happen, but you can give them enough so that they have a sense of your values and your wishes. So should that day come, that unexpected situation where now you can't direct your own care, they have peace of mind knowing they heard what you said, and they don't have to decide because you already told them. It's your decision. It's not theirs. And they're just simply carrying out your wishes.
And as soon as I told this, she was a social hospice looking nurse. As soon as I told this social worker hospice nurse what was going on, she had a sigh of relief. My dad had a sigh of relief. His brother, who was sitting next to him, had a sigh of relief. I had a sigh of relief. I could tell my mom had, and she was right across the hallway, had a sigh of relief. She was like, oh, thank God. Yeah.
She was probably smiling in that bed across the hall if she overheard what
you
said.
Because it's like, I swear, because it's like, what are we going to do next? And I said, I know what we're going to do next. She told me in the front hallway. She said, if anything happens to me, take me off life support. And that's going to be my prerogative, too. If anything were to happen to me, take me off life support and take me out of my pain. Because I think, this will be my final thought, and then you can ask me a couple questions about
anything. Sure. Yeah.
I think that doctors, even though doctors, I love them dearly, I think that hospice in this case, in your grandmother's case, in my mom's case, would have been better because we at least would have had the pain management. I mean, doctors were, I know they were because how could you do it? Doctors were feeding antibiotics left, right, and center, and they were also giving a G-tube left, right, and center. So I think in my mom's case, it would have been better to take her home and just call hospice up here.
Right. That could have been the way it rolls. You know, I think you guys were working with a very unexpected situation and just doing the best you could do.
Yeah, we were.
You know?
We were working
situation. Yeah, it was a completely unexpected situation. It sure was. But for your listeners, again, and then I would love to ask you a couple of questions. I think the key here is ideally have the conversations long in advance of the issue. If any of your listeners currently have somebody that is in an end-of-life situation, please don't be afraid to call hospice and ask them how they can help, what are the supportive services they can offer, because it's really not only about the patient, it's also about the family. So they sort of are taking care of the whole slot of you. And their goal is to keep your loved one as comfortable and symptom-free as possible so they can enjoy doing the things they love to do, whether it's going to the beach or simply sitting up in the bed and talking with their family, whatever that is. So just please educate yourself about the hospice services in your area and you know, find out what they can do to help and support you.
And I know my hospice also offers nursing care as well. I know that because I've used them on the nursing end. Myself, I've used them on the nursing end due to I have cerebral palsy. So if you are lucky enough to have nurses who also do hospice care, that is the best of both worlds.
Well, in fact, the hospice team involves a doctor, a nurse, a social worker, chaplain, volunteers, complementary therapies like music therapy, art therapy. So there's a whole team of people on the hospice team that will be there to support you. So speaking of your cerebral palsy, my girl, she's a dear friend of mine who does my hair, her brother has cerebral palsy. And that's my really only direct connection with somebody with cerebral palsy. He was born with it. Can you tell me, and I guess the other listeners, like, I assume you were born with cerebral palsy. Is that true? Is that not?
Yes,
exactly
I was.
Is it? Okay.
Cerebral palsy is a lack of oxygen injury at birth. So yes, I was. I was diagnosed with cerebral palsy June 22nd, 87, which is also my birthday. So I've been living gracefully with this disease since June 22nd, 87. And I have been living with it for 31 years and functioning with it. And, yeah.
And so you seem to be on the higher functioning end of the spectrum of cerebral palsy. Is that right?
I am on the moderate end. I am not well functioning. I am not high functioning, but I am on the moderate middle.
Well, I have to say, I was looking at, listening to some of your videos and all the work that both you and Danielle together have done between your books and just the general, these podcasts and just your reaching out to people. It absolutely blows me away, all the fabulous things you've done in the past. What are some of the things you're working on in the coming year?
Well, I'm trying to be a full-time author in the next 3 years. And quit my part-time job, which is in the education field. And as you guys know, teachers don't make very much money. And God knows I love my mom, but she kind of came from the philosophy of you got to be a teacher, you got to be a lawyer, you got to be a doctor. So, yeah, even though her family was solo entrepreneurs to begin with, she had that philosophy, and fortunately she kind of forced me into education, even though I still love her. She forced me into education, so now I'm going back to school to get my second degree, which is in journalism.
Oh, wonderful. So you said in 3 years you want to be a full-time author, is that right? Uh-oh. Did I lose you? Hello? Wynn, are you there? Wynn? Oh, my goodness. I think I lost you. Wynn? Hello? When? Hello?